Hello, welcome to the Creative Writing Life podcast. I'm Justin Sloan.
And I'm Paul Zeidman, and I'm quite thrilled to introduce our special guest today. I've known him for a couple of years via social media and online, and I got to be on his video podcast, I believe last year, from storyintoscreenplay.com. Let's say hi to Gerald Hanks. Gerald, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you guys for having me.
Our pleasure. Our pleasure. Well, we will get to everything you always want to know about Gerald Hanks in just a moment. Okay. Well, all the pertinent information anyway.
Okay.
So as Gerald, as regular listeners of the show are familiar with, we just start with something we've been reading or watching lately. And Justin, you want to go first?
I don't have anything off the top of my head. I was like trying to look through and I was like, what have I been watching? Oh, I know what I've been listening to, though. I've been listening to the audiobook. Did I mention that last week? The audiobook by Quentin Tarantino? I might have mentioned it.
I'm not sure.
Oh, actually, I've been listening to my own book, too. So is that allowed? I've been listening to Wicker City. It's the audiobook. I had never listened to the audiobook. Of course, I'd read my own book and editing and all that. But the narrators did quite a good job. It came out back in 2020. But just recently, I was realizing that we had done a teleplay first, and it was kind of without zombies, but kind of similar to The Last of Us. And so I was like, oh, maybe we should bring that screenplay back up because The Last of Us is kicking butt. So I started listening to the audiobook, and I'm like, wow, pretty amazing.
That's cool.
I always love that feeling. How about you,
nice.
Paul?
yeah, actually, so I watched, my wife and I, we watched Jordan Peele's Nope, the Alien movie. I liked it, but I was a little... It was a little confusing at parts. We both had to go out. As soon as it was over, we both got on our phones. We're like, okay, explain the plot of Nope. So kind of had to like, okay, did we miss something? Or I think I like I said, I liked it. It probably could have been, I guess, a little clearer in terms of story and explaining how everything worked, because there were a couple of times that I wasn't really sure what was going on. And I also, I think it's like just over 2 hours long, which to me, it probably could have been a lot shorter, maybe like 15, 20 minutes, but that's just my opinion. I'm glad I saw it. And yeah, he's really cornering the market on, just unique approaches to different genres. You know, with Get Out, he had the horror and the thriller, and this one's like sci-fi thriller, and it'll be really interesting to see what he does next.
Yeah. I thought it was a fun one. It was like one of those ones that I enjoyed watching. I didn't walk away feeling like, wow, my life has changed, or that was so amazing, but it was fun.
Mm-hmm. Gerald, how about you? Anything worth noting?
One book I've just recently picked up is this book called Riding the Alligator by Penn Deshen.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Michael Wiese to Kenley at Michael Wiese Productions, who hooks me up with all these wonderful screenwriting books. And I'm about halfway through it, and it's really a lot of fun. And he also has essays in here from people like Shane Black, Nia Vardalos, Ron Shelton, Tony Peckham, Alan McElroy. Just a lot of great insights from both Penn and from the people that he interviews for this book, just in terms of it's not a whole lot in terms of structure, in terms of screenplay writing, but a whole lot in terms of the experience and a whole lot in terms of the mindset of screenwriting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not familiar with it. I was going to ask, like, so you said it's a kind of about screenwriting. I was curious, like, what approach does it take? Is it more essays, like just everybody's experience as a writer?
A chapter of it is the essays. A chapter of it is, like I said, people like Shane Black and Nia Vardalos talking about their experience in screenwriting. But most of it is a lot of his experience. Like he was in a he had a writing assistant that he worked with, Jay Roach. Jay Roach was his writing assistant.
Okay.
So that kind of helped. He kind of helped develop Jay Roach's writing style. So a lot of that comes. So like I said, a lot of it is more mindset than technical, structural, ABC type stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that said, I enjoyed that book a lot. And one thing I liked about it as well, just everything else and being a big Robin Hood fan, was at the end, I think it's the end, he has basically summaries of a lot of the other big screenwriting books. So like, I think his assistant or somebody with
his summarized screenwriting library. So
yeah, so that's great.
Yeah, it's basically shorthand screenwriting library, and I've got a lot of those books already. So
it's a good idea.
Got that one. Don't got that one.
Yeah, if you're not sure which ones to read, that's a good way to start and figure out his opinions, or somebody's opinions.
Definitely.
Well, that sounds cool. Okay, so Gerald, let's talk about you. Let's give us a little background about yourself. Like, have you always been a writer? Did you kind of like, you were in another industry and you're like, I'm going to take a stab at writing and see how it works out. I mean, like, were you always a writer or did you gradually get into it?
I always wanted to be a writer. Actually, I didn't really get into it until after I'd been out in the work world for a while. I'd done IT. I'd done web development for about 12 years. And just at one point, I think basically the technology pretty much outraced me at that point. So I figured I would just, you know, move on to do something else. And I started getting freelance writing gigs. And that started kind of getting the ball rolling. And as far as screenwriting, y'all ever heard of the 48-hour film contest?
I've heard of a few of those type of things.
Okay.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I started doing those, and like I said, basically like the premise is that they give you a name, a job, a line, a prop, and a genre, and you have to write, shoot, edit, and render a 4 to 7 minute short film in 48 hours. Ooh. They give you the material Friday night at 8 o'clock. You got to turn it on Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
Oh my gosh. And yeah. So were you one of the filmmakers who just took it all on, or did you work with a team?
No, I was one of the writers. I was one of the team. Just like I wasn't on set. So I let that be somebody else's headache. But I did that for about 3 straight years. And the funny thing is that my producer and my co-writer for a lot of those projects end up being, and is now my manager.
Hmm. That's great.
And so he's also a writer. He's also a writer and, and like I said, when he started getting into management, I was one of the first clients he signed. So,
oh, that's great. That's great. So how did, where did you go from there? So you had the 48-hour film festival and you just decided, okay, I really like this. I'm going to start writing features. Or did you just kind of like start dabbling, or did you like really just dive right in?
I really started to immerse myself in a lot of the books on screenwriting. Like I said before about the library that Pendesha mentions. And like I said, I've got basically right here by my hand, I've got like a whole shelf full of screenwriting books, and just kind of immerse myself into the structure of it and the language of it. And just because I had tried to write novels before, I tried to write short stories, tried to write novels, and just looking at screenplays is like a completely different language. And then just the more I learned about it, the more I got into it, and the more I thought it fit my writing style.
Okay. And so I'm also, so like I mentioned at the top that I've known you for a couple of years. I think I found you via your website, storyintoscreenplay.com. So how did that come about? Did you just like all the things you were learning while you were learning about writing, you thought, yeah, I want to pass these on to other writers?
That's the biggest part of it. Like I said, a lot of my experiences, a lot of how I came at it. Like I said, I came from the IT world. So it obviously is a lot more structure and like things like programming and code. And it's like a very structured approach. And just looking at screenwriting from that perspective in terms of like how the structure of a screenplay breaks down. And I just started, you know, it's like this, I figured out things like act two is like twice as long in the middle. Just like, it's more like four quarters than three acts. So,
okay.
So just the more I learned to learn about structure, the more I started posting about it, the more I started wanting to learn to share, the more I wanted to try to help other writers who were in the same boat.
Okay, I get that. So what were the kinds of things that you were writing when you were starting out? Was there a particular genre that you liked to work in, or did you just kind of like, hey, I like this, and I like this, and I like this?
Well, it was more kind of, actually, I'm a big sci-fi nerd. That's mostly what I read and mostly what I watch. And that was one of the 48-hour films that I did was a sci-fi, but I started just kind of exploring other things that I like. Like I had written a script about poker because I was playing poker at the time. Written a script about a guy who tried to get into the World Series of Poker. And I was also into comedy. So I also wrote a comedy script that was on the National Lampoon Comedy Gold finalist list.
Oh, that's great. So, okay. So I also understand that you, was it the Kairos Prize?
Kairos,
a script
right.
of yours, you won for that. And that's more of like a faith-based kind of contest?
Right. That was a script I wrote with a client. He kind of came up with the idea and I helped him develop it. And we would kind of hash out the story ideas, usually over a Friday afternoon barbecue. And
a good setting.
Yeah. And we would just hash out the story and the characters and kind of an approach as to where these characters are going, not so much less about the message and more about the characters, let the characters convey the message through their actions rather than basically preaching to the audience. That's kind of the part where I had to guide him through it. So
sure. And what was were there any results of the getting the Kairos Prize? I mean, did that lead you, but you'd said your manager had signed you when he had started being a manager, but did the Kairos lead to any other opportunities, like any gigs or know, that kind of thing.
Well, that was the big one in terms of that. Whenever he showed it, like I said, he had just started with this agency. They were basically a literary agency, and they just started getting into screenwriting. So when he showed them that script had won a prize, then he said, okay. And it's like, then that's what basically got me signed on. And it also had a nice little cash prize to it and was able to pay off my credit cards with it. So hallelujah for that.
That's always great. So before we get to your vote writing method, I'm going to toss it over to Justin and see if he has any questions for you.
Yeah, for sure. I saw you've been involved in screenplay contests as a reader as well, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I'd love to just chat about that a little bit.
Austin and with Coverfly. Also, to read scripts for Coverfly.
Awesome. How long have you been doing that?
About 3 years now.
Okay, cool, cool. And what's been your experience? We've had some people on here talk about the negatives and the positives. I especially love to hear about the positives, but, you know, some negatives are okay.
Okay. Okay. You mean just in terms of the experience of reading scripts?
Yeah, I mean, for contests, do you recommend some aspiring writer go out there and start reading for contests, or what would be your thoughts on that in general?
You mean in terms of like an aspiring writer trying to learn more about how to write?
Sure. Or if there's any other benefits to being part of the contest that you might have come across, networking, what have you?
With Austin, definitely was networking. Like I said, I've done both coverage and first round judging for Austin. That's how I was able to get into the Austin seminar the last couple of years.
Oh, cool, cool.
And that was enjoyable. And as far as Coverfly, it's they're one of the few that actually pay for script readers. But like I said, you got to slog through a lot of stuff.
Now but he mentioned the Austin Film Festival. Yeah. Sorry, before you go on, I always obsess over the Austin Film Festival, and this year's
he really does.
Oh, really? Have you been?
I used to go. I went for like 4 years in a row from 2011 to 15 or 16, somewhere in that zone.
And yeah, then I just started going last. Again, so. Yeah, I just started going the last couple of years.
Okay, I might have seen you around this year then.
Yeah, and I'm in Houston, so it's nothing for me to go to Austin.
Yeah, that's great for us. It's not bad, but you know.
Well, yeah, it's a plane ride away for us.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Justin was on me for at least, because we've been doing this for almost 2.5 years. And pretty much since the beginning, he said, you really got to go to Austin. And this past year, like I think it was Black Friday, you know, they said, here's the Black Friday deal. And I talked to my wife and said, yeah. And she said, yes, you should definitely go. And Justin's like, it's about time.
we should have named this podcast the Austin Film Festival podcast.
Yeah, I didn't see a single film, but I went to so many panels and met so many people. And it was just a great opportunity. It's great in terms of networking, great in terms of meeting other writers. And it's like, right before I went the first time, I talked to Chris Vogler, wrote the Writer's Journey. Uh-huh. And the thing he right before I went, he said, I said, what do you recommend? He said, hang out at the Driscoll Bar in downtown Austin.
We've heard that name a few times on this show, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. I had a question for you about because both Justin and I have read for Austin as well. So what would you say as a reader is the biggest takeaway you get from a lot of the scripts you read? I mean, I'm just like, for me, it's a lot of writers who send their scripts in that, in my opinion, a lot of the scripts just weren't ready yet. They were still in an early draft kind of. It wasn't first draft, thank goodness.
Right.
But a lot of them, there was still a lot of work that needed to be done. And so I tried to be as positive with my notes for the comments that I could. But sometimes it was just really hard because the script needed so much work. Now, has that been your experience, or have there been other things as well?
I'd say that's pretty close to the truth. That's for both Austin and Coverfly. And one of the approach that I kind of take with that is I always try to break it down into what works and what doesn't work or what needs work.
Sure.
And that way you have the positive comments that say you have you have a strong protagonist. He has clear drive. He has clear goals. He has clear motivations. What doesn't work is that all the rest of the characters don't have that, which means there's not a lot of conflict. There's not a lot of stakes. There's not a lot of tension, not a lot of momentum driving the story forward.
Mm-hmm. Have you found, as both a writer and for a reader, that your analytical skills have really improved, especially from being a reader, that you're able to see in other people's scripts what works and what doesn't? And have you been able to, I guess, translate that into your own work?
Oh, definitely, definitely. That it forces me to look at my own stuff a lot more critically than if I hadn't been a reader. And like you said, that a lot of these people who enter some of these contests or submit it for coverage of their fairly early draft, they don't even know what works and what doesn't work yet. Like I said, they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
So I think in that respect, if you want to talk about being a reader helping you as a writer, then like I said, sometimes when you're looking at your baby, it's kind of hard to see the issues with it. But when you look at somebody else's baby, then you can look at it more impartially and evaluate. And it's like, well, you can see this worked and this didn't work. This was really well done. This could have used a little bit more effort into it. So I think in that respect, that it can teach you a little bit of objectivity.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
I'd love to hear more about Coverfly. I don't really know anything about Coverfly. I know about Austin, of course, but what is Coverfly? Is it just another contest, or do they do more?
They work with a bunch of contests. They work with Script Lab, We Screenplay, two or three others, Short Scripts. They work with a lot of these contests, and basically they're kind of the clearinghouse for their coverage and their contest judging.
Oh, okay, cool. So they don't run their own contest per se. They do the coverage of the reading for others, and then
right. And that's one of the services. They're also a service for writers in terms of posting their projects. And you ever heard of the Red List?
Yeah. I've seen probably Paul or somebody post about it.
Mm-hmm. They run that. Yeah, they run the Red List.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, Coverfly is kind of like, it's almost like a hosting service almost. Right. You can list
a little like the Blacklist.
Yeah, you can list yourself and your scripts, but they also right. But if you have the thing is that. I think like ISA, you can do a lot of contests. You can feature those on your profile, but with Coverfly, it's almost a select group that it's, I guess, especially the more high profile contests that you can have however you place in that on your profile.
Yeah.
And like, and Gerald mentioned the Red List, it's kind of like, I get almost like the best of the best. Mm-hmm. Like they have it for screenplays and for TV, and they also break it down by genre. I mean, like as I've mentioned, because my Western was it's placed highly on the Red List, just for Westerns, which, you know, fine with me. But you see it all the time on Twitter, like a writer say, hey, my script made it onto the Red List for fantasy drama or fantasy pilots type of thing, and it's like good for you, because they are constantly getting more and more scripts hosted and listed on that service. And so just you have to think of, like, you know, they have like what 150,000 projects maybe listed. Oh, yeah. And so if yours is in like the top 3% or the top 1%, that's really saying something about your work.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So two questions then. One is, how does somebody become a reader for a screenplay contest? How did you go about it?
Well, I had done it for smaller contests. And then usually that some of these sites like Austin, like Coverfly, like Inktip or someplace like that will list that they're looking for readers, and they'll ask for a sample. And you, like I said, you just look at the script and, like I said, break it down in terms of what works and what doesn't work and submit that as your writing sample. And then they'll usually assign, if they like your work, they'll assign you scripts.
Cool. And then my last one is, then I just wanted to hear your opinion on screenplay contests in general. Every once in a while that pops up, you know, like, are they worth it? Which ones are worth it? Is it, you know, some people spend like hundreds and hundreds of dollars submitting to random contests, thousands of dollars every year. And like, what's the smart strategy there?
I think the smart strategy, especially for beginning writers, is, especially if you're writing a specific genre, aim for contests in that genre. Because if you're aiming at something like Austin or Nickel or Blacklist or something like that, then that's, especially for a rookie writer, that might be aiming a little high. But if you're in a specific genre, aim for contests in that genre. Like I said, when I won K-Rose was a faith-based contest. And obviously that won that contest. How well it would have placed in something like Austin or Nickel, and it's like, who knows? But and the other thing is, I would say get coverage or feedback before you submit to the contest, because that way you will know what professional readers are looking at and how they'll evaluate it before you submit to the contest. Because it's better to pay that money to get the feedback and get constructive feedback from a professional reader that you can use, rather than paying that money for a contest and not getting feedback and then not placing and then not knowing what you can do to improve.
For sure. I was going to add that one part I enjoyed about reading for the contest was really looking at how they want you to grade for some of these contests.
Yeah, that too.
Because if you're submitting for a contest and you're like, but I write outside the box stuff that doesn't follow the marks, then you're going to be like, yeah, you're out of luck probably. And most of these
that's true. That's another thing. Like, read the rules. Read.
Yeah.
And like you said, just like to understand what that contest is looking for. Like you said, you're not going to submit a rom-com script to a horror contest.
Yeah, for sure.
People might. That's a sad thing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like a really horrible romance. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about the perspective. That's really what it comes down to. Okay, so Gerald, so I want to talk to you about, I want to say you call it your vote writing right. method. Right. So I, you know, for those unaware, Gerald does a presentation explaining. It's really helpful. And very, I like the approach that you take in explaining it, but I'm going to toss it to you just kind of like, you know, give your, like, here's how I do it.
Okay. So the VOTE is an acronym. V stands for victory. And the thing behind the victory is, what does the character want? It's like Aaron Sorkin says, don't tell me who the character is, show me what he wants. So V is that victory. What does he want? O is for obstacles. What's in his way? What's standing between him and the victory? T is for tactics. What's he going to do to get around or over or under or through the obstacles to get to that victory? And E is the emotional need. What emotion drives him to pursue that victory? What drives him to employ these tactics and overcome that obstacle to get to that victory?
Okay. So, I was hoping you could elaborate a little bit more.
Okay.
That's what it is. Because I think what I really liked is that because I was writing this down as watching your presentation. So victory like slash goal. So that right. kind of helps put it in perspective. Right. So I think what was really good about the way you explained each of the letters. So for victory, you had an example from a film that that everybody in the audience was able to relate to, or they were familiar with. And I think that really helped. But what was also really, really cool was that you would like talk about victory, but then also talk about how it related to the other three. So like, here's right. their victory, but here's the obstacle and here's the tactic right. and here's the emotion. Right. And I think I want to say that you can apply that to every scene, and that it, yes. it kind of helps move things forward. Now, can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yes. Usually when I work with clients, I have them start with a vote at the story level, like the overall story level, in terms of what's going to be their objective throughout that story. But you can also break it down by the act level, by the sequence level, by the scene level, and also by the line, even down to the line level.
Wow.
So you can even by, what does this line mean? How is this line going to get that character closer to the victory? How is that line going to put an obstacle between their opponent and their victory? How are they using that line as a tactic to attain that victory? And how is that line feeding into their emotional need?
That's great. I just really like that. I just think it's such a unique approach. Now, did you come up with this on your own, or was this kind of like someone influenced it?
Well, I did take an acting class years and years ago, except they used goal instead of victory. I thought G-O-T-E, that didn't make sense. So V-O-T-E, the marketing for it is just like right there. It's easy to remember. It's like everybody knows what a vote is. And it's like I say, every character should get a vote. And this approach also helps with, like I said before, like if you've read some of these early draft scripts, like the protagonist is really strong, but everybody else is really weak. So they put all their eggs in the protagonist basket. The thing with the vote is that it makes sure that you don't have, you know, mustache twirling antagonists, or you don't have thin cardboard love interests, or you don't have the goofy sidekick that's just there for comic relief. That each of these characters has a vote. Has a victory they want to pursue. They have obstacles in the way of that victory. They have tactics that they try, and they have an emotional need that drives them. And like I said, I kind of compared a little bit to Save the Cat. I think raise your hands if you've all read Save the Cat.
Yeah. Read it.
But, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
But a lot of people use Save the Cat as a template for structure. My goal is say what you want about it. It's like, but it's a lot of people use that as a template for structure. What I want to do is use the vote as a template for character.
Oh, okay. Nice. I one more question, then I'll toss it to Justin. Do you have, as part of your presentation, do you have, I guess, examples that you use to I guess support each letters? Like for victory, is there any movie or any character that you just kind of like, okay, you think about, you know, Indiana Jones, think about Atticus Finch, that sort of thing.
Well, the one I usually use in my presentations is Rocky, because it's the first Rocky, because just about everybody's seen it. If you haven't seen it, at least you're familiar with it. That what's Rocky's victory? His victory is he wants to be still standing after 15 rounds. And like I said, the good thing about that victory is a good victory is very clear in terms of what that character is aiming for. It's not nebulous. It's not the audience isn't like, what does he want again?
Mm-hmm.
That in that victory, his victory is he knows he's not going to win the fight. His victory is he just doesn't want to get knocked out. He wants to still stay standing after 15 rounds. So what are his obstacles? His biggest obstacle is he's facing the heavyweight champion of the world. So Apollo is the biggest obstacle. His other obstacles are he doesn't have the money for training. He doesn't have a lot of resources. He doesn't have his coach doesn't believe in him. He's also trying to strike up this relationship with a girl who works at a pet store. So what are his tactics? Like those are your trailer moments. You're punching the side of the beef, the running up the stairs, the drinking the eggs, the chasing the chicken. And so what's his emotional drive? What's the E? What's the emotion? His E is that he needs to prove to himself that he's worthy of the love of a girl that works in a pet store. Because that ending scene where his face is busted up in a hamburger and he's yelling, Adrian! It's like, everybody laughs at that, man. There should not be a dry eye in the house because this is a guy who just went through hell, who just got his face pounded into tomato paste. Mm-hmm. And he is screaming in pain, crying out for the woman that he loves after he's endured this ordeal. And then the music, da, 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 and the music comes up, you know?
Uh-huh.
And another thing I talk about is that what a lot of people miss, like I said, especially in some genres, is the point of what I call the fundamental theorem of storytelling. The point of a story is not to teach a lesson or to preach a sermon or to deliver some type of moral message. The point of a story is to evoke an emotional response in your audience.
Hmm.
It's like when you write a comedy, what response do you want to get out of your audience?
You want laughs.
Right. If you do a horror movie, what response do you want to get out of your audience?
A scream.
Right. So if you tell like a really sad romantic drama, what response do you want to get out of your audience?
A whole bunch of wadded up Kleenex.
There you go. You don't want them to think, that was a very interesting premise. I will really intellectually cogitate over this premise. Like, no, you want them to laugh, cry, scream, cheer, boo, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I like that a lot. I think using Rocky is a really a great example. And I loved how you had the victory, but I loved how you also listed all the obstacles, the conflicts that are part of the story. And as you were mentioning, I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but as you were talking about them, it's like, oh yeah, there's that. And there's that. There's all these layers and levels of different conflict and obstacles for him. And I just think that, that's a really great example to use. And I think it really hits home for a lot of people.
Yeah. No, it sounds really cool. Sounds exciting. Do you have a book on this right now, or is it more of a presentation that you do?
It's more of a seminar right now. I've done the outline for a book. I've pitched it to a couple places. I just haven't had the time to bang it out as a complete total draft of a book. Yeah. Like I said, my thing is more delivering these things in person, more delivering these things in seminars, and also working with clients one-on-one to develop their stories along these lines.
Really cool. Really cool. And last I wanted to just touch on before we sign off and ask about how do people get in touch with you and all that stuff was the manager side of it. I've been talking to some managers lately. I had one before. This is something that, writers are always thinking about, when is the right time to have a manager? I want to ask, what's been your experience with having a manager? How have you approached that? How has it helped you? How have you seen it develop you as a writer? All that stuff.
Well, one of the things, of course, you always get is how do you get a manager? How do you get an agent? How do you get a manager? Like, that's going to be the magic key to open up everything. And it can help. How do you get a manager? It's my case, I got lucky. It's I knew him before he was a manager.
Yeah.
And actually, I helped him with some scripts. And once I had reached a certain level with my writing, like I said, winning the K Rose Prize or something like that, then he was able to go to his bosses and pitch me as one of his clients.
Nice.
So I would say just in terms of when to look for a manager, I would say two bare minimum, three ideally, and more if you have them, just absolutely drop dead perfect scripts. Not early drafts, not ideas, not treatments, drop dead perfect scripts. Mm-hmm. Because like I said, the manager's job is to try to market you to studios and producers who sign you on as a writer. So you want to give, this is a way of putting your best foot forward, because like I said, this manager is putting his reputation on the line when he talks to these studios about you as a potential client, as a potential writer. So you have to deliver the goods to make that manager look good. Because if you don't look good and that manager doesn't look good, and then you have no chance of getting the gig.
Mm-hmm. And does your manager work with you on a development level nowadays, or more like there to help you submit, or what role do they play?
A little bit of both. He's got quite a few. I was one of the first ones he signed, but he's got quite a few right now. I'm don't want to tell tales out of school, so I'm not going to say where, but he's put my stuff in front of some notable people. And I actually had funny story that it's like right around Thanksgiving, I was talking to him. He's like, well, what kind of plans should we make for the new year? He said, don't expect anything in December because it's going to be absolutely dead. And then about a couple weeks before Christmas, he tells me, oh, I got you a general with a certain studio. So
sweet.
So I got a Zoom meeting with one of the development executives at a notable studio that I can't mention, but I had sent in a script, and the good news is that the executive liked the script. The bad news is they couldn't use it on that particular outlet. But he gave me some ideas as to what they were looking for. And I have another project I'm hopefully going to work with. Actually, a lady I met in Austin, that she has a project kind of along those lines. And ideally, we're going to work together and get that in front of them.
Awesome. Possum. Cool. Paul, did you have anything else?
I don't think so. I did want to talk about one last thing that I got from your seminar. I thought it was probably one of the best things that you said. It's that plot comes from conflict and conflict comes from character. And I just thought that was just so spot on. And I mean, can you kind of like touch on that one just a little bit?
Well, I pretty much got that from the idea that everybody's asked is like, do you start with plot or do you start with character? And when people start with plot, then their characters usually end up pretty thin, because when a writer starts with plot, then the writer is pulling the strings, the writer's driving the car. But when you start with character, the characters drive the car. The idea is for the characters to drive the story. And that's especially true when a lot of my clients are people who have written books or written novels or trying to turn them into screenplays. And one of the things I kind of beat into their heads is that when you write a novel, you're writing for readers. When you're writing a screenplay, you're writing for actors.
Hmm.
So like I said, that's why the whole vote method basically comes from an acting class. And like my whole approach, even though I'm not an actor, that a lot of my approach came from a very actor-centered approach. Mm-hmm. And that, like I said, with people who write novels, they're going to have their name on the front of that book. It's like when you watch a screenplay, it's not going to be that writer that's going to be sitting on Jimmy Kimmel's couch talking about this movie. Because that's why you want to write great parts for these great actors to be able to sit on that couch and cheerlead your movie and say, this is the best thing. When I got this script, I told my agent I had to do this part. It was the best thing I've ever read. I have to be in this movie. And then I got to do it, and I was able to deliver a great performance with these other great actors, and we delivered a great movie, and everybody needs to go out and see it. You want them to be your cheerleaders.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. That's great. Gerald, this has been great stuff. Where can people find you online?
You can find me at storyandascreenplay.com, which is my blog that, like I said, you post screenwriting advice and movie reviews and kind of my experiences. Like I said, I posted a blog about when I went to Austin for the first time, which was a lot of fun. Got to meet Shane Black. That was fun. On Facebook, I'm at Story Into Screenplay. LinkedIn, I'm at Gerald E. Hanks.
Okay. And if somebody wants to find out more about your vote method or maybe the seminar, do they still go to storyintoscreenplay.com, or is there another way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, there's an email form on there, or you can direct message to the Facebook page Yeah, those are probably the best two ways.
Okay. Fantastic. Gerald, thank you so much. This has been great stuff.
All right. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, check out Gerald's stuff. If you're needing help, I don't know if he's available right now, but at times he is probably available.
Oh, yes.
He seems to be available right now. Reach out, say hi, and same thing with us. Say hi to us if you want. Be sure to leave reviews for the podcast, share, spread a word of mouth, all that stuff. You can find my books on Amazon, and I'm working on a TV show right now, so that's pretty exciting. We'll have to talk about that in the near future.
Sounds excellent. And I'm Paul Zeithman. You can check out my screenwriting blog, Maximum Z. It's at MaximumZ.blog. I'm also on Twitter at Maximum_Z. And yeah, please check out my screenwriting books on Amazon, the Go Ahead and Ask series about screenwriting and pie. They make great gifts for writers all over the place. Like he said, he's Justin, he's Gerald, I'm Paul. This has been the Creative Writing Life Podcast. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and most importantly, go write something.